It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Today, we're talking real estate. We're talking real estate and a lot of these, this kind of real estate that is really top of mind these days, and that's the short-term stuff. Our guest today is the CEO and founder of the number one top-producing team at eXp Realty Worldwide, the short-term shop. Avery, and well, her name is Avery Carl, and her team specialize in helping their clients create wealth outside of your zip code by assisting them to acquire short-term rental properties in the most recession-resistant markets and teaching them how to manage them from afar, which is really cool. We kind of like that passive and semi-passive income on this channel, right? So let's welcome Avery Carl. Hi, Avery. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Nice to see you. How did you get into this business, and is it still fun?
Well, it is still a lot of fun, and I got into it by accident. My husband and I had just gotten married, and we'd saved up, I don't know, like about $10,000. And we were like, oh, cool. We've got some money saved. What can we do? We're going to be these just so savvy, so financially, whatever. We read a lot of Dave Ramsey and we were like, all right, we need to know what we can do with this money. So we went to a financial advisor and she told us that we didn't have enough money for her to deal with us. And so we were like, okay, now what do we do? And we thought, well, I mean, there's got to be something we can do with this than just other than just let it sit in the bank. And we had just moved from New York City to Nashville. This is back in 2012, back when Nashville was cheap. It's not anymore.
No, it isn't.
She'd been trying to get us to buy in this super hip, fast appreciating part of Nashville. And we said, no, thanks. You know, we are coming from Brooklyn to Tennessee. We're done with neighbors. We want to go out in the country. So we did. And, we kind of thought back to that and said, well, you know, if what those numbers she was telling us about are true of how fast these houses are appreciating, maybe we could save up, you know, a little bit more money, another 10, buy one of those houses, put a renter in it. And by the time our future kids need to go to college, then maybe it will have appreciated enough that we can just pay for their college out of that and not have to come out of our own pockets, which is a really stupid reason to invest, but that's what we did. And first house that we bought made about $1,000 a month over the mortgage, a little bit less. So mortgage was $647 a month. We were able to rent it out for like $1,550 a month. So pretty close. And coincidentally, that's about how much after all the deductions and everything I was making at my dream job working in the music industry. And we said, wait a minute, this house is making the same amount of money as me while we sleep, as you know, me going to work every day and spending 2 hours commuting back and forth. We need more of these. Let's learn about this and actually build a business. So only then did we start researching. Most people research first and then buy the house. We did it the opposite way. And yeah, so then we started listening to all the podcasts and there was only one back then. It was Bigger Pockets. This was like 2013 or 14. And so we had one more like single family home down payment left. And we said, well, what can we buy that's going to make us the most amount of money the fastest? And we said, how about a short-term rental? And we said, okay, but not in Nashville because they were already like very anti short-term rental. But we had been that like 1 or 2 weeks prior to the Smoky Mountains, stayed in a cabin in Pigeon Forge. And we said, oh, well, we stayed in a cabin. All our friends stayed in cabins. Somebody owns these rental cabins. Let's try that. And so bought our first short-term rental, figured out how to self-manage it remotely. Because again, back then there was nobody on YouTube talking about this. There was no data. There was nothing. We just kind of had to figure out how to do it. And we did. And the rest is history.
That's awesome. And that's what happens is people find opportunities because of their own personal experience like you did. And now all of a sudden here you are two books into it and you are, you know, creating short-term opportunities and you're teaching other people how to do that, right? So what do you do? You teach people how to do this. You also run a real estate agency, right?
Yeah. So I kind of backed into that as well, got my license to do our own deals. And it started out just in the Smoky Mountains as friends saying, how much are you making on that cabin in the Smokies? Help me buy one, teach me how to manage it. And then that became friends of friends. And then it became true clients that I'd never met before. And eventually I was number one agent in the Smokies. And then realized that a lot of our clients were also buying beach houses, and they would come to me and say, hey, I also want to buy a beach house. Is there a U in Destin, Florida? And I'm like, well, no, but I can put one there. And so now we've got offices in 20 markets. We've sold over $4 billion in short-term rentals. We've helped over 5,000 investors buy and sell short-term rentals. And for all of our buyer clients, we teach them everything they need to know about setting up and managing their property for free. So the goal with that is that we make them successful on their first one, they then come back and buy more with us in more markets. So,
Do you teach people how to run their own? Like, for example, I've never had a bed and breakfast. I wouldn't know how to do the listing and how to run it and the cleaning and the handyman, which I understand is the whole kit caboodle. You teach them all that, or you do it for them, or both?
So we teach you how to do it. We don't manage other people's properties. The whole way that we became successful and built a 250-door portfolio is by not having a short-term rental property manager. The average split there used to be 40% of your gross. Now it's about 25. So, you know, I think it would be hypocritical if we became successful through self-managing and then said, hey, let me manage yours. I'll make you successful. No, you won't. you're going to pay me 25,000. I mean, 25%. So we kind of teach them how to fish. And if they're buying with one of our agents through our agency, then we do that for free. But if you're buying in a market that we don't operate in or don't have agents in, then we've got a paid program for that as well.
And so you'll teach people how to find them, buy them, mm-hmm. And then maybe even set them up. What if they have multiple ones where they don't really want to run them? What do they do then? Let's say I was somebody that wanted to do 20 of these. Mm-hmm. What happened then?
So if you wanted to do 20, we'd help you buy 20. And probably what we teach you how to do is hire a virtual assistant to do a lot of this stuff. Because at the end of the day, you know, like I've got 8 short-term rentals. And if I paid a manager 25% last year, I'd have been paying somebody $250,000 for something that's maybe a $45,000 a year job. Because a lot of it's automated. It's just kind of managing the systems. So what we teach you how to do is everything you need to know about how to you would need to learn how to manage it, but we'd help you teach you how to hire a VA to do all that. So you're still not paying that whole 25%.
Gotcha. Well, you know, short-term rentals have been in the news a lot lately. And it seemed to be, at least from what the news people are saying, I don't believe this, but from what the news people are saying, was a big thing a few years ago. Everybody jumped into these short-term rental opportunities and they took up all the inventory. And now the market's a little softer, and so they're having to get rid of it. The market is softening, especially in places like Florida, where you are, and you know, things are not quite as rosy as they were. Mm-hmm. Is there still opportunity in the short term rental business? And also, as you answer that question, what happens to city regulation? Because I know there's a big backlash in a lot of cities about, hey, you can't run short term rentals in my town.
Yeah, I've got a lot to say about that.
I figured.
It really, I will say, I only invest in and I only suggest that people invest in true vacation rental markets. So the vacation rental subsect of short-term rentals. So these are beach markets, mountain markets, national park markets, areas where people are going to rent a house or a condo anyway instead of a hotel. What I don't agree with is going into, you know, like a quiet street in Kansas City and buying a bunch of properties that would have been primary homes or long-term rentals and converting those to short-term rentals. I don't agree with that. I think that, I own a lot of long-term rentals too. And the types of markets that I invest in for short-terms and long-terms are completely different for that exact reason. So I like to focus on markets that 90% of the real estate in those markets that's ever been bought and sold has either been a vacation home or a vacation rental anyway, not coming in and converting a bunch of long-term living situations into something else, but buying in a market where everything's a vacation rental and always has been, like here or like the Smokies. It's been since the 60s. My grandmother's been renting vacation rentals down here in Destin. She lives in Mississippi, been coming down here and renting them since the 30s. So areas where that's just what the industry is. In terms of anti-short-term rental regulation, I again focus on these types of markets where they're dependent on tourism. So here, like Destin, Florida, 30A, Florida, there is no industry outside of tourism. There's very little hotel presence. And the entire economy of this area, whether it's small businesses or otherwise, depend on the tourism coming in and staying in our vacation rentals.
Really?
Yes. Same thing with the Smoky Mountains. There's not a lot of hotel presence. Everybody who's always gone on vacation there, they've always stayed in cabins. So we focus on markets like that. And I get it. You know, I chose to live in a vacation market and I make the majority of my money on short-term rentals or short-term rental related businesses, but I also don't want one next door to me. So like, I get it. I'm trying to raise my kids. I don't want people in and out. Like, I understand that. So anti-short-term rental regulations to keep housing available for people who want to live there, I think is important. But I also don't think that short-term rentals are the cause of unaffordability. I think that was inflation, that was COVID, that was a lot of things. Because now, you know, in all the MLSs that I'm a member of, I mean, there's minimum of 2,000 listings just sitting there from 200,000 on up. You know, that's not short-term rentals didn't cause that. The economy caused that.
That's
short-term
true.
Rentals are just such a small, small percentage of the real estate market as a whole. But I get it. You know, I agree with them.
Now, let's talk some numbers, because most of the people listening to the Wealth Architect podcast are numbers people. And so, you know, I look at it, I'm a big stock market guy. I do have some real estate, but it's certainly not active real estate like I would consider a short-term rental business the way you're talking about it. And, you know, the stock market gives you an opportunity to do semi-passive income. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure if you got scale in your business, you could talk about doing semi-passive income too. So let's kind of compare apples and oranges in a certain way to say, what kind of returns can you forecast? And I know a lot of it depends on the market and mm-hmm. the season and the availability, but what kind of returns can you forecast so that it's worth your while to be able to do it? I know there's depreciation and other phantom income, but mm-hmm. what happens with the real cash on cash kind of returns?
Okay. So again, it's super subjective in short-term rental compared to long-term rental, because like long-term rental, the lease is what the lease is, and the same amount of rent is coming in no matter who manages it or owns it. With short terms, you and I could own the exact same property next door to each other and do one small thing different and have different incomes. So that's just a disclaimer before I say this. You want to see a minimum of 10% cash on cash return, but if there are things about the property that you can change to get it up to 20 would be considered a home run. 10% would be considered a base hit. Like, not, it's not necessarily, I'm not going to buy this, but you might need to do some things to it. But if you can get something up to 20, then you've hit a home run. But I think where people make mistakes is they're looking only for home runs and not base hits. But, you know, 10%, if you're buying a cute, clean, comfortable place to stay, and maybe there's some things you can add, change up some decor, add some amenities, things like that to get it up a little further.
Hey, it's Mark Yeagy here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2-4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2-4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more. Got it. Okay. So you're talking about adding some value add after you buy it, not necessarily expanding it, things like that, but just doing some service things that can improve the customer service, let's call it.
Yeah. Yeah. And optimizing your management. I mean, around here, there's so many that have like a 7-day minimum, because the big property managers want a 7-day minimum, and you can make so much more money by just tweaking that to a 4 or 5 day minimum.
True.
So, you know, there's things that you can do, not even related to the property itself, to just improve the management to get that up where it needs to be.
So going back to what you said earlier, if you're talking about a home run being 20% and you have to pay 25% to have the property managed, it's a loser. Right. So I see why you're saying manage it yourself. Yeah. It's not that hard. Get a good VEA that mm-hmm. can handle it for you. And, you know, you'll still, instead of making 20%, you might make 17%.
Right.
That's beautiful. Cool. Well, what else can you tell us about this business? Because it's really a fascinating business. I have a few friends that are in it, and people like yourself that seem to be capitalizing on this trend. And I can tell you, I've traveled to 72 countries around the world, And as many times as possible, I try to stay in short-term rentals. I just like the feel of having a kitchen, and I like the feel of being in a neighborhood, or, you know, kind of living with the locals rather than feeling like a hotel tourist. So what else can we learn about your business that maybe I haven't asked you?
There's just so many different strategies to investing in short-term rentals. So I think that short-term is a great place to start for a new investor because you can change things quickly. So, you know, if you've got a lease signed and you're like, oh man, I really should have put this different in that lease, you've got a year before you can change it. Whereas with short-terms, if you realize like, oh, I can make more money if I, or this guest, I've had two guests in a row be unhappy because they didn't know what kind of coffee we had. Let me just make sure we send that to them before they check in. Things like that. You can change things or you can add things with almost an immediate change in income because each day is so short compared to a year. So you've got more flexibility as a newbie. Your mistakes won't have to last you a whole year. You can change things up as you're going and the income will reflect that almost immediately. And it's also a great, I call it a gateway drug to other types of real estate investing, but also other types of businesses, because you have to learn systems and processes, and managing one property really only takes about an hour a week, but you might decide, hey, I really like the running the business side of this. I'm going to buy some businesses or I'm going to buy some real estate. So I think it's a great place for new investors, seasoned investors. It can be really great. Again, for if you can get bigger properties that, you know, I've got one property that makes $200,000 a year. I paid $650,000 for it in 2019. Now you can't get it for that today. You probably get it for like 1.2, 1.3, but you know, that's a lot of money. And on a 15-year note, you know, I'm almost halfway there. So, there's just a lot of different advantages. And if you're somebody who just, hey, I really want to have a beach house to use of my own for a while, or, you know, here and there, and maybe I'll retire to it, but I can make some money off of it between now and then. So there's just a lot of different strategies, whether it's cash flow or whether it's tax advantages. So short-term rentals actually are the only asset class where you can get the benefit of a cost segregation analysis to get that bonus depreciation without being a real estate professional. So if you, it's the choice of a lot of high income earners. So around October every year, we get a ton of doctors, attorneys, high income folks who come in and want to buy short-term rentals towards the end of the year, because there are, and again, I'm not a CPA, but I do have a whole playlist on my YouTube channel, on the Short-Term Shop YouTube channel, with different CPAs interviewing them about this. So you can go listen to that and hear all the best CPA minds, same take on this. But they come in and they buy, you know, $1 million properties because they can meet the material participation requirements in one of three ways. And then that offsets their big, huge W-2 taxes. So we get a lot of high-income earners at the end of the year that come and buy short-term rentals because of those great tax savings that you can get without having to be a real estate professional. So short-term rentals are the only asset class where you can do that. So we get a lot of tax buyers. I'm trying to think what else. There's just a lot of different strategies that you can use, whether your goal is just pure cash flow or just I want to have a cabin in the mountains and that can make me some money. You can achieve kind of all of those things at once.
So can somebody new get into this? How's the financing work? Is it difficult to get financing for something that you're not living in most of the time?
It is really not. So most of our clients use either one of three things: a conventional investment loan, which the minimum percent down is 15%. A lot of people think it's 20. It's actually 15. Or they'll use a conventional vacation home loan, which is only 10% down.
Really?
Yeah. Some of the other terms are not quite as good. Like the interest rate will be a little higher, but 10% down that's how I started. I only having to save 10% to get into something versus 20, you know, that's half. So somebody who was scraping pennies out of the bottom of her purse to get started, it really made a difference for me. There are some stipulations for that. Like you have to stay in it 14 days a year or something like that, but they're all fairly easy to meet. So that's probably the best hack. And then the third one that the more experienced investors will use is what's called a DSCR loan, where they're not giving you the loan based on your own personal debt to income ratio. They're giving you the loan more like a commercial style loan, where they're giving you the loan based on how much the property will make. Those are pretty great because, you know, if you maybe don't have a high income, but you've got the down payment, you will be able to qualify. Whereas if you don't have a high income, you're only going to be able to qualify for so much on conventional. So DSCR loans are used a lot in this business, but again, the interest rates are usually a little bit higher, but it makes it a little bit easier if you've got the down payment to get through the approval process.
Really, really fascinating. It's a cool business. I really like the idea. Last question for you. Do you recommend people go through like Airbnb, or are they going through their own websites? How are most of these people setting up? I know it probably depends, but how do you direct people normally?
So we have them set up on Airbnb and Vrbo, and then we'll use a property management software. So the one we use is called Hospitable, and it brings all of those listings on all the different platforms into one place to edit and change things. And it does have a plugin now for you to have your own website for people to book directly, which you're not going to get a lot of direct bookings. But the reason you need that is because Google Vacation Rentals is kind of coming up now. It just started last year. And if Google doesn't put it down and say, we're not bothering with this anymore, I think it will have a bigger and bigger presence. But in order for Google Vacation Rentals to pick you up, you do have to have your own website. It has, which is just a very easy template on Hospitable. But a lot of people want to get hung up on like trying to get all these direct bookings and do Facebook ads to get them. Like, I get wanting to have some control there, but you're just never going to be able to put in the dollars as one person to compete with an Airbnb or Vrbo. Just list your property there. Stop acting like they're the big evil corporate giant. Like, you're going to make a ton of money on it. Are there going to be things you don't like? Yes. Is there going to be a time that they side with the guest when the guest was being a complete a-hole in your house? Yes. But you're also going to make a lot of money. So, you know, you just have to take the good with the bad. So Airbnb, Vrbo, and, you know, having a direct booking website available, but not spending too much time on that.
Gotcha. Interesting. Well, thank you for opening your kimono here and sharing all the tricks and hacks of your business. How can people find out more about you? You did mention a YouTube channel, so let's talk about that and let's talk about your books.
Yeah. So the shorttermshop.com is the easiest way to find us for everything. If you want to be a real estate client, again, we've got 20 markets for you to choose from, everything from under $200,000 markets to $2 million markets, beach markets, mountain markets, desert markets, whatever you want, we have got it. And again, if you buy with us, we teach you everything you need to know about managing the property. But if you want to buy in a market that we're not in, but you still want us to help you, we do have a paid program called STS Plus that is pretty affordable. It's a membership program. So there is like a course in there, but it's more like just having access to us for questions and things like that. We have a bunch of calls every week so you can ask questions and learn stuff, but you don't have to attend. So not a lot of accountability required. Again, it's pretty affordable. And then YouTube, we've got a lot of stuff on YouTube, all of our podcasts, a bunch of just different information on there. It's youtube.com/theshorttermshop. And then Instagram is @theshorttermshop.
Cool. Well, we'll link all those to the show notes. And I really appreciate your time, your wisdom on our show. This is a fascinating business. And I don't think it's going away. I think we might have gone through a little lull, but it seems like people like you are excited about, you know, promoting this business. So I think it's on its way continually up. And I can certainly tell you, as a person that uses it, it makes a lot of sense for me.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you for being here. And those of you who are listening and watching, remember what I always say, never give up your power and your health, your wealth, or your time. I'll see you next time. Take care. Bye.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.